This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about a new report about public defenders in Indiana. And if you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we will do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Joining me now are three guests. Andrew Cullen is public policy and communication specialist at Indiana Public Defender Commission. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Derek Mason is senior staff attorney at the Indiana Public Defender Commission. Hi, Derek.
Hello. How are you?
Doing all right. And welcome to Torin Liddell, data and statistics analyst at Indiana Public Defender Commission. Welcome, Torin.
Thank you very much.
Derek Mason, let's start with you, and let's start out super basic. What is a public defender?
Sure. So a public defender is someone that has been appointed by a court for someone who cannot afford a lawyer in cases where our Constitution or our state statutes here in Indiana require that you be eligible for one. And so those are, as some people question, real lawyers. They are attorneys. Working in the state of Indiana under various systems of payment through counties, and they work in adult criminal proceedings. You can get a public defender in a juvenile delinquency proceeding if you've been alleged to be a juvenile delinquent. You can get them in children need of services hearings, so where the state is trying to take your children or impose restrictions on your access to your family. And you can get them in mental health commitment hearings where the state is trying to involuntarily commit someone for mental health proceedings, and you can get them in appeals of all of those cases through the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court. So our attorneys in Indiana that do public defense work are really a bit of a jack of all trades, if you will.
And so how does it work to become a public defender? I mean, so you're in a certain county, you're registered as an attorney, and then you just have your name on a list somewhere, and every once in a while you're called up?
So back in the day, your court may actually just order you to take a case and be like, you on the street, a Joe Blow attorney, you're mm-hmm. going to be handling this case. And that was not great. That's not a great system in America where any attorney could be responsible to take any kind of case, whether they're qualified or not. So in Indiana, we kind of have a few different systems that are primarily used. And I'll explain what the commission is in a moment, but the commission allows counties that choose to participate in its program to have contracts, which is what this survey is about. The county can contract with an attorney. They can hire an attorney and establish a public defender office, hire attorneys to work in that office out of a county office on a salary schedule, just like essentially all of your prosecutors are in Indiana. They can be paid hourly. And the commission doesn't allow this, but there are still counties not in the commission program that still do pay just a flat fee per case. So, for example, you might get $50 to handle a misdemeanor and be expected to handle that misdemeanor case throughout the entire life of its case from beginning through trial, whatever happens with it.
And so let's talk about this new report. How did it come about? Is this a new endeavor or is this something that happens every single year?
Yeah, so this is a relatively new endeavor. The commission is this kind of state body that sets standards for public defense in Indiana. Unfortunately, we're a completely voluntary system, so we have 64 participating counties, so about two-thirds of the state is in our system. And we, like I say, we set caseload standards, education and experience standards, and pay compensation standards, in addition to a variety of others, with our goal being that you can't have an overworked attorney, an underpaid attorney, and you can't have an unqualified attorney and provide the constitutionally required effective assistance of counsel. So when you look at this particular situation, we saw a study come out of North Carolina and a study come out of Michigan, which Dr. Liddell can discuss in more detail. But we saw those, and we knew that we have never really addressed our contract payment in Indiana in a comprehensive way. And so one of the first things we wanted to really look at is when you don't have an office and you're not just paid hourly for every hour you work, and you're paid a contract, just a flat rate, you know, and you are working out of your own private firm or your own private individual office, how much are those attorneys actually having to pay out just to meet their basic expenses? And then look at how much are they making on these public defense contracts? And does it make sense for these attorneys to actually be taking these cases? One of the main other reasons we looked at this is that the Supreme Court has reported to us that judges in virtually every county across the state are reporting to the Supreme Court that they are struggling in finding attorneys to fill public defense positions in Indiana. And so we've done some digging on that. And that also was another reason why we wanted to move forward on this kind of study.
And so, I mean, let's break it down. Are law firms, in some cases, losing money when one of their attorneys goes to be a public defender?
Well, I would let Dr. Liddell kind of, if you wouldn't mind, take over for a moment.
Sure, go right ahead.
Talk about what the actual results of this were and what it means and kind of what the other states were doing and what it shows.
Torin Liddell, how do you respond to that?
So, to answer your question quickly and then maybe add some additional detail, it is possible that attorneys are losing money taking these public defense contracts. We found that a typical attorney is not quite losing money. They're just making a very, very small wage. So the number we quote in the article is, I believe, $5.16 an hour.
Wow.
So, you know, they're making some money, but, you know, very, very little. And that is not inconsistent with what was found in other states. As Derek mentioned, there was a North Carolina study. In that study, they found that essentially their people were losing money in taking public defense cases, especially if they had all the expenses they should have. And what I mean by that is, in order to really do public defense work, there's a certain level of staffing that you need. You know, the attorney should not be handling all those duties themselves. So things like clerical support, paralegal support, and especially investigator support. So in the cases where someone actually was paying what they needed to pay to have that available, they were definitely losing money. And similar results in Michigan, that their attorneys were either breaking even or losing money.
So this pay disparity. Oh, go right ahead. Sorry to interrupt. Well, this pay disparity. Does it come as any kind of a surprise? It seems like this conversation is happening in a lot of places across the country.
You know, it's not super surprising. Unfortunately, it might be a surprise the degree to which it has shown up. You know, $5.16 an hour. We knew overhead would be significant, but we also knew For instance, in the case of North Carolina, our attorneys were already better compensated. North Carolina was in a serious they had had several reductions in pay over time, actually, for their public defenders. So they knew they were in a serious situation. So, you know, maybe we sort of hoped that it wouldn't be quite as bad as it turned out to be. But really, when you think about it, there's a lot of expenses that go into providing public defense. And so it's not incredibly surprising that, you know, these contracts are not sufficient to cover those expenses and compensate the attorney.
How'd you get the data for this report?
So we sent out a survey to several methods of disbursement. So we have direct contacts with the counties as part of our work as the commission, at least in commission counties. So we sent it out to all of our contacts there. And then we also sent it out to DefendNet, which is a listserv for defenders in Indiana, and basically as many people as we could get to send it out, all via email, we sent it out, and then we collected responses for about 2 months in last summer, and then compiled those results.
Andrew Cullen, if we could share a goal behind this study for the audience, what would that be? What did you want to find out?
So as of right now, our primary goal is to get the word out that this is actually happening in the state, because I don't think that the general public really has an understanding of how the public defense system overall, if it were strengthened, could be a positive benefit in so many other areas in society. So as of now, we're in the process of educating both our policymakers and the general public about this issue.
And Torin, I guess, how common are studies like this across the country right now? Or how common have they been?
So that's hard to say. Definitely, perhaps more common than they would have been in the past. And one of the reasons for that is a lot of times when these kind of studies were done in the past, there wasn't really an incentive to publish, or at least the incentives weren't great enough that they felt the need to. So these types of reports ended up as like internal documents for the purpose of decision making. So people weren't sending them around. They weren't, you know, releasing it to the press. They were doing these studies and then saying, okay, how can we make decisions based off that? But I do think there has been a big movement in the public defense research community to kind of stop that practice, to share our data and share our methods. And in fact, in developing this survey, I worked extensively with the staff in Michigan who had done the most recent survey to kind of get their thoughts on what they would have done different and how they set up their survey. So I think there is a movement towards letting this stuff out into the sunlight more than there used to be. But even so, you know, we found two other surveys that had been done. So I think there's a movement towards that, but so far it's relatively rare.
Derek Mason, would you say there's good data on public defenders in Indiana?
Actually, there's really terrible data on public defenders in Indiana. One of the main problems is, as I mentioned, the commission is a completely voluntary system, and we do collect some data. Historically, we have not gone around collecting data in a comprehensive way or in a way in which it was really accessible for review, a lot of paper. And so with Dr. Liddell being on our staff for the past few years, we have really tried to turn this system into an electronic reporting system, a way that we can start pulling data. But we're still missing basic accuracy and basic data in a third of our state that doesn't report anything to the commission whatsoever. And so they just report some data to the Supreme Court that the Supreme Court asks for. And more often than not, when you dig into that data with those counties, for example, when a county is thinking about joining the commission and we use that data as a starting point, it's almost always very wrong what has been reported by the Supreme Court in that way.
And we're talking about a new report on public defenders in Indiana. My apologies for the interruption. We will be right back to talk more about this. And if you have questions or comments, find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Today we're talking about public defenders in Indiana. A new report from the state's Public Defender Commission shows public defenders are underpaid, and it details some of the consequences around that and other issues. We would love your questions and comments on the topic. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. And we're joined by three guests: Andrew Cullen, Public Policy and Communication Specialist at the Indiana Public Defender Commission. Torin Liddell is Data and Statistics Analyst at Indiana Public Defender Commission. And Derek Mason is Senior Staff Attorney with the Indiana Public Defender Commission. And Derek, just before the break, I had to cut you off. My apologies. We were talking about the state of data on public defenders in Indiana.
Yeah, no, we were just finishing, so it's perfectly fine. The reality is that the data is really not there, and we would love to be able to collect data from every county, and that's something that we plan on working with the Supreme Court and the legislature to try to make sure we can capture all of that.
And Torin, why has there been a movement to share this data, do you think?
I think members of the public defense research community are realizing that there's been a lot of reinventing the wheel going on. You know, if we didn't release this study, if nobody had released this kind of survey before, every time someone does one and just wants to use it for their own internal use, they kind of have to come up with it all on their own. Whereas if we're working together like this, we can kind of iterate in a way that doesn't waste resources, essentially. And we can also compare and contrast like we did in the report. So that if, you know, one particular state seems especially unusual, you know, then that becomes a signal that more work might be needed to look into it. So yeah, I think it's primarily for the benefit of agencies like the commission.
Derek, what kinds of consequences have you seen that can connect to public defenders being underpaid?
Well, like we talked about briefly earlier, one of the main things that we're facing is an attorney shortage in Indiana. And not only an attorney shortage, that feeds into a public defender shortage. Over half of our public defenders in Indiana are taking public defense cases on a contract in our commission counties. We don't have the data on a third of our counties. And that means when we are looking at this, what is the incentive for a lot of public defenders to take a public defense contract when they're responsible for their own benefits, they're responsible for their office overhead, they're responsible for their support staff, if they can even afford them? We had respondents in this survey say, I would have support staff expenses if I could afford a support staff person. And when we talk about support staff, I mean, you think of a doctor's office. To run a professional office, you have clerical, you have assistants in a variety of ways and areas. A lawyer is also a professional who has to have a lot of assistants to do good work. And one of those things in criminal defense, because a lot of people don't really understand what is a criminal defense lawyer or a person that's representing a parent in a Department of Child Services case, what kind of support do they need? Well, they need administrative clerical support. The professional obligation is that you must keep your client in the loop on what's going on in the case as a basic threshold minimum, and keep them informed of dates, of court hearings, everything. Clerical support, sending those reminders is very important. Being able to file all of your briefs, memos, motions, everything is very important to get that. You need investigators to go out, visit the crime scene, to meet with witnesses. You need social workers in the Department of Child Services case to go to some of the services that the state is paying for and be an independent witness and observer. There's so much that goes into these cases that's not just a lawyer sitting there drafting up a piece of paper and then showing up in court.
Are there types of attorneys that are disproportionately called upon to be public defenders and therefore disproportionately affected by this disparity in pay?
I think that the attorneys that are most getting disproportionately affected are those counties, just simply those counties that have decided to do almost their entire system based on a contract where you get a flat rate for X number of cases. And that's not that much different in the end from just paying a flat rate per case, really, which is not allowed under commission standards. So this is kind of a slightly better version of that. You may not take your maximum number of cases, so you can make more than just a flat rate per case in the end. But it totally, the counties just look at what their prosecutors make often, and then they say, all right, so to take half of a caseload of what a full-time attorney could do, we'll just pay you half what the prosecutor makes. But the prosecutor is sitting in a county office, and they have a pension plan. They have health insurance for their family. They have a private investigative force sometimes, as well as the public one called the police, that can go out there and do further investigation on behalf of the state. A public defender has to find all of the time to do that themselves if they don't have the support staff or the office or any of the resources.
Joran, let's get into the weeds here a little bit. In this report, it says a key finding is that Indiana public defenders require overhead compensation, an increase in general compensation, or both to provide appropriate pay to contractors and to maintain true pay parity with county prosecutors. So can you help break this down a little bit more? What are these overhead costs?
So in this study, what we defined overhead as is anything that is required to provide public defense, to provide sufficient public defense, except for pay to the attorney. So basically all the expenses that an attorney has to cover if they're a contractor, not including their specific pay. So it includes things like support staff pay, support staff benefits, it includes attorney benefits, it includes, you know, what you need to pay to keep an office running, so like rent and utilities and things like that. It includes things like professional development, other things like that But by far the biggest costs that were reported in the survey were support staff and office expenses and then attorney benefits. It does not include things like, you know, personal expenses for the attorney, and that includes things like student loans, which many of our attorneys have to pay. So that's what's included in overhead for the purposes of this study, and all of those things are things that the opposing prosecutorial staff do not have to cover themselves.
What do we know about how much these costs vary county by county across the state?
I think it varies even individually on a individual attorney basis based on, if you're a member of a multi-attorney firm, there might be some efficiency gained there in terms of, you know, sharing support staff and thus sharing those costs. But I think a big area of variation is, you know, kind of what the attorney decides they can do without. And that's a bad kind of variation, right? We don't want attorneys deciding, well, this contract amount is so low that I can't hire this paralegal. And so therefore my overhead is less than the other guy who decides, no, I need to hire a paralegal. And as Derek mentioned, we had people mention that in the response. And we had them report how many support staff they had. And there was a significant number that had no support staff at all. And then the vast majority of them had what we would consider insufficient support staff, which is a commission standard for how many support staff we need per attorney.
We're talking today about a new report on public defenders in Indiana with Andrew Cullen, public policy and communication specialist at the Indiana Public Defender Commission. We also have Derek Mason, senior staff attorney at the Indiana Public Defender Commission, and Torin Liddell, data and statistics analyst at the Indiana Public Defender Commission. And Andrew, I guess what would you say in short is the value in having a strong public defender system?
Yeah, so one of the things that we have to think about when we think about the public defense system is really our overuse of incarceration generally, nationally and in Indiana as well. The United States has 3-4% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's prisoners. We have per capita the highest incarceration rate in the world, and we're second, and Russia is a far second to us. So sort of when you remind people of that for too long in this country and the state, we have used incarceration as our primary tool to change behavior. And our Indiana criminal code is governed ultimately by the Indiana state constitution, which has a section that is clear. It says that our criminal code must be founded on the principles of reference, not vindictive justice. We need to be addressing folks the root cause of their issues and trying to get them the treatment and support they need in order to not do what we call recidivate, which is commit another crime. We want to correct their behavior. And so that's ultimately what, the public defense system is all about. And we have done some statistics. So we've been able to figure out that if you are a county that participates in the commission system, which has lawyers that have in most cases, much lower caseloads and a higher level of training, then those counties are spending less on their county jail populations, about 9% less what's happening. We're also finding that, you know, you hear a lot about the Children and Family Fund and all the money that is spent in DCS. Well, children who are placed out of home in our commission counties who, you know, theoretically have quality or access to a higher quality public defender, we're finding that they are taken away from the family and kept in out of home placement for an average of 50 days shorter. We're finding that we are sending folks from our commission counties to DOC who are more likely to need to be in a DOC facility because they are more likely to recidivate or commit another crime. Our folks are proving that because we have a 20% lower rate for lower citizen folks who are in the DOC facilities. I mean, ultimately, you know, Larry Landis, who helped found the Commission and Public Defender Council, used to always say that there are four purposes of criminal justice. You've got retribution, you're punishing someone. Two is rehabilitation, you're trying to fix them. Three is incapacitation. You have to take them and put them away because they won't stop committing their crime unless they're incapacitated or deterrent. And, you know, a strong public defense system and a public defender who is not overworked and has access to the support staff that he or she needs is able to focus on rehabilitation. And that is really critical to the long-term success of our society.
Where does funding come from for public defenders, Andrew?
So primarily, it's funded by the counties. So both the United States and the Indiana Constitution require that the states shall provide public defense. What Indiana has done historically is allow that to happen at the county level. When the commission was established in the late 80s, Indiana then formed a fund called the Public Defense Fund, which is appropriated partially by general appropriations for 2 years in the budget and also partially by court fees. And that's the fund that we as the commission dole out to counties who choose to opt into our system. In exchange for following our rules, they then receive a percentage reimbursement of their expenses. But as Derek mentioned, we only have 64 counties involved. And I think we would all argue that we would like to ultimately see all counties choose to participate in the system, but that would require additional funding as well.
Yeah, Derek, not all the counties, as we just mentioned, are active in the Public Defender Commission. So what effect does that have?
It has a large-ranging effect. One county joined a few years ago because their system, their public defense system, was going to completely fail. They reached out to us and said, our attorneys are going to rebel. They are not making enough money, but we are a community that cannot afford to pay what we need to pay. And so we need to join the commission so that we can get some of that money that we need to pay them back, because this is a constitutionally required service. These individuals are required, if they cannot afford a lawyer, to have one appointed for them if they ask for one. And this is not something a county can simply say no, or the just can't find. If there's no lawyers, and you can't provide what you have to provide. So the problem really is multifaceted, but joining the commission allows counties to solve a lot of their initial problems. Our hope, and what Andrew tried to say, and Torin can expand on, our hope and what we're showing is that joining solves a lot of problems, helps solve a lot of problems ancillary to this budget crisis and getting some money back. It lowers the rate of recidivism. It returns children home faster, and the things that Andrew spoke about.
Torin, I guess so we can have sort of a picture into this world, how expensive is it to run a law office?
Oh, that's a broad question. But so in terms of the study, what we looked at was kind of on a per attorney basis. So, you know, law offices vary in size. In fact, I think the largest law office that responded had over 20 attorneys in it. But we looked at, on average, essentially, what is the median cost to support one attorney in this survey? And there it was about $54,000 to provide all the support, the overhead for a single attorney, a single full-time attorney. Mm.
And so I guess, Andrew, let's look at the State House. What are the attitudes there like when some of these issues are brought up?
Well, you know, we are a conservative state. And so what we like to talk about from the commission's perspective is that it's fundamentally a conservative principle to have a strong public defender. When the state comes and knocks on your door and does, you know, what is potentially the most powerful and detrimental thing the state can do to a citizen, which is strip them of their liberty and arrest them and incarcerate, you know, you need someone to be able to adequately and effectively work on your behalf. Also, the same goes with, you know, DCS and Chin's cases. You know, when someone knocks on your door and says, I'm here with the government to take your children away, and you, as a parent, need to have access to a strong advocate who is not overworked and who is well-trained to help you. And so we try to make that point a lot over at the State House. That really resonates. It also resonates when we talk about overall lowering of costs to counties by having a stronger public defense system. You know, we've had a lot of issues lately in the past year or so. We had the jail overcrowding task force that was meeting regularly. And so we're always happy to discuss public defense and how that plays into jail overcrowding, because we can't just continue to build more holding facilities for our citizens. We've got to provide them with access to rehabilitative services so that incarceration doesn't become so prevalent, because it is so expensive. So I think the combination of reminding policymakers that public defenders are defenders of liberty, and they're defenders of our citizens' rights to defend themselves against government action. And then, two, a strong public defense system ultimately saves money.
There is a lot more to talk about. We will keep the conversation going after a break. We're talking with a live panel today about public defenders in Indiana. And you can jump into the conversation yourself. We will feature some of those questions from Facebook and Twitter coming up next. We are on social media at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail and get your voice into the conversation by calling 866-476-3881 and giving us your first name and where you're calling from. 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in less than 2 minutes. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on a new report about public defenders in Indiana. As always, we would love your questions and comments. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We're joined by three guests today. Andrew Cullen is Public Policy and Communications Specialist at the Indiana Public Defender Commission. Derek Mason is Senior Staff Attorney with the Indiana Public Defender Commission, and Torin Liddell is Data and Statistics Analyst with the Indiana Public Defender Commission. And Derek, what is the situation like for county prosecutors in Indiana, by contrast?
Well, I'm not an expert to say all of the details of that, but essentially, our prosecutors, you have your elected prosecutor in essentially every county. And then they have a chief deputy prosecutor also in essentially every county. And those are all completely state paid. Those are paid, they have a special pension for the elected prosecutors that is different from a regular public employee pension that a office public defender would be eligible for, or any other public employee. And they receive their statutory salary, which is the same as a judge's salary. And again, for the elected prosecutor, and then the chief deputy gets a percentage of that. So whenever a judge's salaries go up, those go up the same percentage. And they are, again, completely paid for by state dollars. Then you have the deputy prosecutors that you would see most often in a courtroom, for example. Those are county paid positions, except there are a lot of grant funding. And then in counties that have a prison or a mental health facility, the state also pays for deputy prosecutor salaries and benefits as well. And there are counties that only have those, what I would call like a prison or mental health facility deputy, so that they have no real county funded prosecutors.
Derek, why are things so different for prosecutors?
Well, things just kind of started different. Back in the day, you think of Kill a Mockingbird and Atticus Finch, and everything was very pro-public defense and pro-liberty. And there was actually a public defender comic book, as a superhero, essentially, except your everyday defender of public rights. And we are now a very pro-prosecutor nation. Andrew's talked a little bit about the jail overcrowding and the prison populations in Indiana and countrywide, and the issues with that. You can look at our TV shows and you can see NCIS and Law and Order and this emphasis on police and prosecution. We've really pulled away from that mentality that really started our country. And that's been going on for quite some time. And so prosecutors, I actually just got a call the other day from a public defender where they wanted to just increase the salary by a little bit and get two new positions. And the prosecutor's arguing, well, if you get that, I need double that. We're not anti-prosecutor by any stretch of the imagination. That's not anything that we're saying, but there's a history of prosecutors getting what they want at the county council level because of a lack of value, I think, that they see with public defense.
What do you think has led to our society becoming, or being rather, more pro-prosecutor, would you say? Sum up.
I think that should be our next study.
We could do a whole show on it, supposedly.
Historical analysis. But I do think that part of it has just been what I've talked about. It's just been a political shift. I really don't know exactly what it is, but I do think that from the public defense perspective, we've really lost the sight of the value of what public defenders provide. That a quality public defense actually gets people home. It gets people working and productive in society. There's time to investigate. Why is this person here? If you have time, we don't reimburse misdemeanors in Indiana. The legislature has not given the commission the funding to provide our 40% reimbursement on a misdemeanor case. And most people come into the criminal justice system on a misdemeanor for their first offense, right? Something small. And if you don't have the time and you don't have the social worker support as a public defender to meet with those usually young clients, figure out what's going on in their lives, figure out what services are actually really important to advocate for them with the prosecutor, or even prevent a conviction, perhaps some other alternative, so that they don't get saddled with something that ends their ability for student loans or housing or other support systems that will actually make things worse. We have an opportunity with misdemeanors to get involved and turn people's lives back onto a good path. And unfortunately, people think public defenders, they think all our job is to go out and get someone out of prison, or just to go out and get a murderer off the hook, or whatever the case may be. And that's not the situation. The situation is, how can we best help make sure everyone's constitutional rights are protected and that everyone comes out of a criminal justice system better if we can all do that?
Torin, you may not have this right in front of you at the ready, but do we have data on how much more likely one is to have a bad outcome if they use a public defender versus if they hire their own attorney?
So I don't have that directly in front of me, but yes, there have been many, many studies on this, and they're actually quite mixed. And I think the reason for that is that the public defense systems in America are incredibly mixed. Mm. And in fact, some of the best data that I've seen has been in what they call natural experiments, where it just so happens that in a particular locality, the public defense system is split among multiple systems. So they'll have one system that has a lot of support staff in office, and then the other, approximately 50% of the clients are just being assigned based on the kind of role system we mentioned, where like there's just a list of attorneys and the court says, okay, you go to this one. And in those cases, we find that the more robust public defense system is considerably better in terms of outcomes for clients. And I think that is perhaps the takeaway that we should take from all of this research, because other research that's looked at public defense versus hiring your own attorney doesn't necessarily look at, what kind of public defender they are, because it is mixed. Some studies have shown that if you get a public defender, you're actually better off. And they call that kind of the institutional mobility or institutional understanding. The public defender is in that court every single day, and mm-hmm. they know all the actors there. And so maybe that's why you're better off, even if, just by virtue of how much the disparity is between private and public caseload in those cases. Even if the private attorney can spend more time on your case, the public defender knows how to spend it most efficiently. But again, in other cases, primarily in situations where the public defense system is not as robust, then you're better off with a private attorney.
Andrew Cullen, we have a listener question from Twitter. Aaron asks, what can be done from a legislative standpoint to support Indiana's public defenders?
Yeah, so every 2 years, we have to, as the commission, go to the legislature with our hat in hand and ask them to, at the very least, keep our funding at a level that we don't have to start cutting what we give to the county. Because what we're required to do is, as new counties come into the system, if we run out of money in the public defense fund, then we just start slashing the reimbursement levels we give to the counties. And historically, when that happens, then counties say, well, we're no longer receiving enough money to bother with following your rules and standards for the quality of public defense. So they just drop out of the system. So every year, that's our top priority, is to make sure that we have adequate funding to keep the county's reimbursement, which is around 40%, at that level for the next biennium. So the legislature needs to at least continue that system. Now, the Task Force on Public Defense, which wrapped up its final executive report about a year and a half ago, made some larger recommendations. And one of those was the state really needs to shift from just sort of expecting the counties to manage this to accepting their true constitutional responsibility for providing, you know, public defense services. And there's lots of ways they could do that. They could require all counties to participate in the commission system. That might be a good first step. As far as creating, you know, state-funded positions in counties, such as prosecutors, ultimately, if we would just start to look at the prosecution system and say, how do we start to get more fairness and equity for the public defense side, and what systemic changes need to happen, I think that would be what the state can do.
When it comes to arguments at the state level surrounding this, can you predict a lawmaker's stance on this by their party? How political is it?
You know, we really try to not make it political. I really don't think it is. We have a lot of really strong advocates from both sides, and we have legislators from both sides who seem to be completely disinterested in the public defense system. And so ultimately right now it's the appropriators that have the most influence on the system. And so, you know, constantly reminding them that this is a way to ultimately make society safer, more just, and also save a little money on the back end from these ridiculous incarceration costs and the overwhelming costs of building new Department of Corrections facilities or jails is why this is an area that should be looked at very carefully.
Torin, are public defenders across the state or maybe even nationwide a cohesive group in some way? Is there a structure in place for them to push for this kind of change, or is everything still kind of too fragmented?
So I would say nationwide, certainly it's a somewhat fragmented. There are national bodies that represent the interests of public defenders and also people that do legal aid, civil legal aid, you know, from the NAPD and from the ABA. And there are national organizations, and I do think there is crosstalk, but each state has a different method by which they provide public defense. And so I think the concerns of someone in a state, an attorney that works in a state where, you know, public defense is entirely at the state level and it's all state employees working in state-run offices, is very different from an attorney that's working in Indiana as a part-time contractor providing public defense and then having a bunch of private cases on the side. So I think just by the nature of the structure of public defense in America, it's somewhat fragmented. At the state level, I think there is quite a bit of cohesiveness. Another agency, the Indiana Public Defender Council, is essentially tasked with that kind of advocacy. We work very closely with the council, and whenever possible, you know, we try to work together on projects like this. In fact, they were very helpful in distributing the survey that eventually went into this overhead report. So I think in the state of Indiana, I think there is some good organization, even if nationwide it's harder to work together because we have such different concerns.
Torin, is there more research that you want done? What information is still missing?
I'm sure there's a thousand things that I would love to have done. There is another report that we worked with, actually national actors, so we worked with the ABA on, that will be coming out soon on the caseload standards in Indiana. So as both Derek and Andrew have talked about, there in a commission county, there are caseload rules that you have to abide by. But those caseload standards were set according to kind of national standards that were very old and nothing specific to Indiana. So we did a much more detailed study looking into what needs to change about those caseload standards with the help of the ABA and also Crowe Horwath, a consultancy company in Indianapolis. So that, I think, is going to be super helpful in informing our future decisions. There are so many other studies. We would love to look at the effects of specifically like certain kinds of support staff, especially social workers. Social workers are pretty rare in public defense in Indiana. There are places that have them. And all the evidence that we have looked at shows that those social workers in those areas are doing a really great job for both the clients and the public defenders. So that's something we would like to look into systematically. We would love to look at all sorts of changes in terms of like comparing an office to comparing, you know, these kind of contract public defenders to really show what we believe to be true, which is that, you know, with enough resources, public defenders can extract even more benefits out of the public defense system and you know, commission membership. So there's a million things I could go off on, but those are the ones that immediately come to mind first.
Derek Mason, we have a question from Facebook here that I'm going to throw to you. But if anyone else feels like jumping in, feel free. Rob asks, or says, I'm curious about the role of for-profit prisons and their lobbying efforts on public defense budgets. Derek, what do we know about that?
It's all an argument over finite resources. I would let Andrew Cullen speak to that as well. But, you know, the reality is that it's about finite resources and everyone going to the state and wanting to advocate for their particular set of requests. I don't have, Andrew, I don't know. I don't have a lot on the private prison situation, whether that's impacting things significantly.
Andrew?
I think I'm no expert on this, but the private prison system is not as big of a problem in Indiana as it is in other places. From the state perspective, the Department of Corrections manages all of their facilities. They don't have private companies in managing them for them. There are still a few county jails that have management companies that run them, but we don't have, they're all government buildings, government owned, and occasionally there will be a for-profit management company that comes in, but that's actually not a huge problem in Indiana. And I don't see the force in the whole place from private prison operators to answer the question directly. I don't see that at the state house.
Derek, in our last less than a minute that we have, what would you say to somebody listening right now, maybe somebody who hasn't interacted in any way with public defenders who aren't sure why they should care? What do you want people to take away from this in about 30 seconds?
We as public defenders need the ability to have the time and the resources to effectively represent you and the citizens that live around you in your community and make sure that everyone's constitutional rights are protected and to make sure that your neighbors get home safe and that they have the training and experience and the rehabilitation they need that only proper training and time with a public defender can provide, or your attorney.
Derek Mason is senior staff attorney with the Indiana Public Defender Commission. Derek, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And I want to thank the rest of our guests as well. Andrew Cullen, public policy and communication specialist at Indiana Public Defender Commission. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks to Torin Liddell, data and statistics analyst with the Indiana Public Defender Commission. Thank you, Torin.
Thank you very much.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director and composed our theme. We're on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. I'm Matt Pelsert. This is All.